This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora tātou and welcome along to Aratoi On Air. Ko Sean Norling toku ingoa and alongside my colleague Amy Tawa, we present stories and interviews from the Utiputi creative community to illuminate all the wonderful things happening here. Of course, you'll know that this week marks the 50th anniversary of Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, so we thought to talk to local and dynamic mana whenua creative Lisa Blakey. Lisa Kaitahu Ma Waitaha is the narrative director and co-director of Atafai Interactive, an indie video game studio based in Dunedin. Previously, she was the community director for Runaway Play, and during her study times at Otago University, Lisa wrote an honours dissertation about Indigenous storytelling in video games. She's currently teaching a couple of papers at Otago Whakaahu Waka, the University of Otago, those being English 230, Creative Writing for Games and Interactive Media, and English 339, Māori and Pacific Literature. Great stuff. Amy sat down recently with Lisa and had a nice chat.
Today we are yarning with Lisa Blakey, Kaitahu Waitaha Pakeha, media, film and communications alumna of the University of Otago, gamer, narrative writer and designer, world builder, lecturer and cat mum. Lisa has extensive experience working in gaming companies like Runaway Play, and in recent years is part of the local indie gaming company Atafai Interactive, who secured national funding to begin their early stages of their game, Toroa Skycall. Lisa has received several awards, including the 2020 Te Maunga Kai Kapua Tena Award, and has been recognised with a 2020's Young Alumni Award. Originally from the cultural mecca that is Timaru, Lisa travelled to Utiputi to study and stayed. Why? Let's find out. Nau mai, haere mai, Lisa. Welcome to Aratoi On Air, and thank you for taking the time to come spin a yarn.
Oh, kia ora, Amy. It's great to be here.
Yay. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, kia ora, koutou. Well, Amy did a great job introducing me. but yeah, I'm Kaitahu Waitaha. I whakapapa to Otako here in Utiputi and also to Te Reo Aroha in Bluff. So I'm very much a southern gal. And yeah, I make video games and I teach video game writing and I love video games. And yeah, that's kind of my creative mahi that I do, is mostly writing for video games.
So you obviously came here to study at University of Otago. What did you come here intending to study?
I actually came to do law. I always enjoyed writing in English at school. I think, you know, my careers advisor was maybe trying to point me into the direction of a traditional career and said, well, you're good at English, so you should study law, which, you know, doesn't really make much sense. But I did do law in first year and I failed it. Was not born for the lawyer path in any way at all. But I also did film and communications, because when you sign up to do law, you do another degree. And so I chose arts, and I've always been interested in films and writing. So I took that path. And yeah, thankfully I did, because I fell in love with it. And even after failing law, I still really enjoyed my time and what I was studying there.
Lisa, your thesis was called Video Games and Digital Difference, Exploring Indigenous Culture and Never Alone. Can you provide us an overview of your honours thesis?
Yeah, absolutely. I think even at school, like, I wasn't traditionally academic or anything like that, but I feel like when I found that niche within media studies, because I could write about video games, that was my key special interest. So I just tried to create, you know, all of my assessments to be around video game related mahi. And Yeah, with the honours thesis, I actually struggled quite a lot in picking a topic because I'd written a lot about kind of gender and video games as well as indigeneity in games, but there wasn't a lot of games out there made by Indigenous people. And so that's obviously a challenge because you kind of need like a creative piece to talk to.
Yeah.
But that year, actually, this game called Never Alone came out, which is created by the Alaskan Inupiat tribe all the way on the other side of the world in the far north. And they created it in collaboration with a game development studio called Eline Media. And so it was a collaborative, shared development process where they created this game based on a traditional oral story from their culture. And it was created with the tribe as well as, you know, the elders, the storytellers. It was a completely collaborative process, which previous video games, there wasn't a history of that at all, really. Particularly not in a commercial sense. It was a lot of kind of Western developers taking Indigenous ideas and characters and tokenizing them and stereotyping them and just misrepresenting them completely.
Plot lines, right?
Exactly, yeah. Diversity of characters. Doesn't matter if we do it wrong, though. And so, yeah, that was what I looked at, was how Indigenous games can be created through collaborative process. And that's kind of the only way that you can create them, because there's safety in the culture, but also safety in that you're not, you know, exploiting people for their stories. And so that kind of took over my life for the year.
As they do.
As it does, yeah. But it was kind of perfect in terms of timing, because at the end of my honours year, I was like, oh, what do I do? Everyone's kind of looking for jobs or like going on to postgrad. And I was like, oh, I don't think I can, I'm ready for postgrad. Just out of curiosity, I was like, oh, maybe there's game studios in New Zealand. And then this company called Runaway popped up and were based in Dunedin and making games inspired by nature. So like a kaupapa that I was really excited to hear about and kind of tied into the honours thesis a little bit as well, just in terms of that, you know, respectful design and reciprocation. And they were looking for something called a community manager, which, you know, strangely lined up with a lot of what I'd been studying for the past 4 years. Things like, you know, audience studies, social media, all of these things that I'd been learning about was what they were looking for in that job. So I was like, oh, I should probably practice like handing in a CV, and did that. They were like, cool, come for an interview. So I was really lucky in terms of, you know, my degree, and the timing was perfect, essentially. Yeah.
What key lessons did you learn because of their research into Indigenous storytelling that transcends traditional oral histories?
Mm. When that game came out, that was 10 years ago.
And
wow. I was kind of thinking, like, this is the beginning of, we're going to see this wave of, like, you know, Indigenous stories and more companies that have these skills in programming and art coming through and, you know, bringing those to remote communities like the Inupiat. But there was just kind of radio silence after. There was nothing that really, that I saw that was coming out of that kind of scale. And I feel like it kind of got boxed in as like the Indigenous game, which is so disappointing, especially from, you know, people that you see as like leaders in the game industry are saying that they're trying to do better and trying to, you know, promote more kind of different forms of storytelling, but that just hasn't really happened. And so I feel like it was a huge catalyst for me taking that leap and like saying, well, okay, I'm just going to like start making games like that. But, you know, that also took 8 years or however long for me to feel comfortable in doing that. And like I had,
definitely,
you know, the connections and the, I suppose, mana to take that step. I mean, the key argument that I was trying to make in the thesis was that, you know, Indigenous games like this can't exist unless there is collaboration and reciprocity. Because when you do it from a place of wanting to profit but not having the reciprocal relationship, it's just never going to work.
A lot of, especially oral histories, stories don't belong to one person.
Yeah,
they belong
exactly.
to a group of people forever.
Yeah.
Like forever before and forever after.
Yeah.
And to try and wrap your head around that and to make a partner or a collaborator out of a group of people, out of an Indigenous community, is such a foreign concept.
Totally.
And it's such a leap. And it's so funny that in creative spaces like gaming, where the MO is literally to think outside the box.
Yeah.
This is something that people can't do.
Totally, yeah. They're like, no, but we've got to think of the shareholders and we've got to make sure that we recoup our investments. And it's just the
copyright,
capital.
Intellectual property, and like it can't incorporate these things. And it's like, no, they're flexible for you. They can be flexible for Indigenous communities.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's estimated women make up only 15% of the gaming industry, and I imagine for Indigenous women it is an even smaller percentage. What immediately springs to mind when you read statistics like that?
Yeah, I love this question, especially because that percentage hasn't really moved the whole time I've been in the industry, which is 10 years now, which is really, that makes me feel a bit crazy. Like, I think it was 10% maybe when I started, and now it's 15%, and it's jumped up in Aotearoa, which is good. I think we're at 20%, but still, you know, 20% is nowhere near equity.
What's one in five, right?
Exactly. It's interesting too, because when I was at Runaway, they are led by, you know, two incredible women and have had, you know, gender equity for a long time, and have even moved past that and trying to get more safety and diversity through, you know, like neurodivergence and other like gender identities and all that sort of thing. And it's never like done in a way that is just ticking a box. Like, they take it really seriously in terms of providing support around making people feel, you know, comfortable and safe.
What does change in a creative sector like the gaming industry, where wahine are underrepresented, look like to you?
I think it just starts from being a honest mentor to the younger ones that are coming through. If you're not seeing yourself, not even necessarily in a representational way, but just in a way where you feel valued, then, you know, you're not going to keep these people at the 2-year mark, at the 3-year mark. They're going to go off and try to find something else. And it is still a problem, because there, I feel like every year I'm seeing less and less junior positions available, which is obviously a problem because we're not getting these new developers coming through. We're not getting these new kids coming through that are bringing these new ideas and these new perspectives. And I think it's because there's not as much willingness to put resource into training them and, you know, having them be supported, essentially. I will say the Polytech here is really great about getting our young people into spaces and internships for those kinds of things, which is awesome. Like, 2 years ago, we had Hina McMaster, who was working with us on Tōrua, but it was more like we were helping her upskill. And then we managed to get her a job with our office mates, Moon Studio, who are also based here. So she just like works with us in the office now permanently, which is awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, so just like having those pathways is, I think, key.
You are one representation of an intersectional creative where culture and gender overlap and result in a nuanced perspective and reading of media, text, games, and the platforms that function and stories that evolve. With this in mind, what are some of your favourite games at the moment?
Love that premise. I increasingly find myself having less time to play games, which is really sad. So I've been falling back on a lot of just old faves. Like, I've been playing a lot of The Sims, shamefully. I shouldn't be ashamed of it, but I just...
No, you should not, because sometimes it's not about being challenged and trying new things. Sometimes it's about finding reprieve.
Yes.
From the everyday and the familiar. Yeah. And we all have, we were talking about it before, we all have those things that we return to because you know exactly what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
And you just need a little bit of consistency for a few hours.
100%.
So go Sims.
Exactly. But I, in saying that as well, I'm just mostly looking for like shorter narrative form experiences. So, which kind of goes against, you know, what larger AAA industries are trying to do, which is hundreds of hours of gameplay and trying to get you to spend as much time on them. But one that I played in recent years was a game called Vemba, which is about a South Indian family who's migrated to Canada. It's a cooking game, but it tells the narrative through the cooking, and it made me cry a lot, and it's like an hour long, which is perfect.
Wow.
Yeah.
Outside of your career in the gaming industry, you are now a professional practice fellow within the English and Linguistics Department at the University of Otago. In the first semester this year, you facilitated a 300-level paper, third-year-level paper, Māori and Pacific Literature. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
It was really great. It was with Stacey Corkow Balfour. And yeah, there's no way I could have done it without her, that's for sure. But the students that took the paper were just the absolute highlight. They were so engaged, so hungry to be learning about this aspect of literature that doesn't get the attention that it deserves, especially in our own country. I remember at the beginning of the paper just asking, you know, so why did you take this paper? And they said, well, a majority of them were saying, like, this feels like a blind spot and it feels like something I should know about, but was never taught about in school. And that was quite shocking, honestly, especially for a 300 level paper. I thought, oh my God, okay, I guess I'm going to be starting from the start a bit more than I expected. So it kind of ended up being more of an introduction. But most of what I taught through it was to do with my video game mahi. So we looked at a game called Umurangi Generation, which is a Māori-made game set in a post-apocalyptic tauranga, where you're a photographer kind of documenting the end of the world, essentially. And also looked at Pacifica Futurism, mostly in the work of Gina Cole, who wrote an amazing young adult fiction called Ngā Vero, which is like a set in space, futuristic Fiji and Aotearoa. And it's a romp. It's a good time. I'm a big fan of like her short stories, so getting to read a novel was great. And I think it's going to be a trilogy as well.
What are your highlights of 2025 so far?
Gosh, actually, my highlight is probably the progress that we've made on Tōrua Sky Call, because it is coming out this year, and we made a really cool trailer that debuted at a really big online showcase. That was awesome.
So exciting.
Yeah, and we all watched it together live and had bagels, and that was really, really cute and just a nice celebration.
That's such a 30-plus
I know.
Celebration. Let's get carbs.
Yeah, we had brunch at 11 a.m.
And like as 30 plus, that brings me so much joy. Yeah. I'm like, I wish I was there, dude. That sounds dope.
It was so good. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's massive though. Congratulations and congratulations to the team, because I know a lot of love and sweat has gone into this. It's been a long journey for you guys, but in the greater scheme of probably the gaming industry, this is probably a drop in the bucket, because there'll be people working for 20, 30, 40 years on something that never sees the light of day.
Exactly. Yep.
What brings you joy?
Reading a good book, sitting with my cats and my partner, being cozy inside, cup of coffee. I'm so 30, eh?
That's
working with other people, working as a team towards, you know, a joint goal. Is my favorite.
That's funny.
Yeah.
In a sentence, what advice do you have for emerging and re-emerging creatives, writers, and gamers who want to get into the creating side of things?
Make bad stuff. Yeah. Don't think about what you're making until you find something that you hold on to and hyper focus on and really enjoy.
That's such good advice.
Yeah, just get your stuff out and don't think about it. Just do it for yourself. That's how I always get over my creative blockage. I always get stuck when I start thinking about people are gonna see this.
How will it be perceived?
Yeah.
Some people should do that more. Say that.
I mean, it's definitely a good exercise sometimes. But like, if you're just making stuff for yourself, you know, just get it out.
Amazing. What advice do you have for those in creative industries who want to make space for emerging Māori and Pacifica creatives in conversations in terms of opportunity and when making decisions?
Just do it. Straight up. Talk to people. Talk to your runaka, your iwi, people like me. Like, we like talking to you, but also just like...
overthink it.
Yeah, don't overthink it and make sure it comes from your heart. Like, if you're just doing it to tick a box, then you're not doing it for the right reasons. Yeah.
Ka mihi nui, kare. Thank you for your time today. It's been a joy to speak with you here about your practice and journey and just like what makes you tick and what you love and what brings you joy. And cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Kia ora kōrua for that wonderful kōrerorero. That was Amy Tawa talking to Lisa Blakey for Aratoi On Air. Thanks to Otago Access Radio for hosting this show. If you want to find out a little bit more about Aratoi, You can spot us on Instagram or Facebook, where our handle is at aratoiotipoti. Or if you dig through the Dunedin City Council website, you can find us there too. We'll be back in a fortnight's time. Until then, ka kite anō.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.